Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues, on American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman, and I'm your host for the next hour and a half, along with my two colleagues, Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And on Wednesdays, Abraham Hamilton III, a.k.a. Abe.
Good morning. Good morning.
Us. How you doing, Abe?
I'm doing well.
You already did 3 hours of radio this morning, didn't you, by yourself?
I did. Yes, I did.
How'd that go for you? I didn't listen to all 3 hours, Abe, I'll be honest with you.
That's all right. 15 seconds would have been too much anyway, probably.
Well, just FYI here for those who don't know, Abe came to us from New Orleans where he was a few months ago. You've been here 3 months, 4 months? What?
No, since I've January. Been here since January.
Wow.
It's,
have you
it's
already?
It's July, Tim.
It's July.
Where is the year going? Well, you watch a couple of those speeches of the Democrat National Committee. You just lose all sense of time and awareness and, you know, purpose in life, really.
Yeah. Pretty much.
You pretty much lose your bearings. No, anyway. So, before that, you didn't do any radio before you came here, right?
No.
So you came here.
Radio.
Well, you're making up for lost time now.
He had to fill in on not AFR but Urban Family.
Yeah. Right.
Communications
for Will and Mickey.
For Will and Mickey, and it's
they just had a baby.
Yes.
Mickey did, not Will.
But I believe Will would disagree.
Well, he did.
He contributed to the withdrawal.
Yeah, I can see where if we start down this road,
yeah,
it's going to be 5 minutes away.
One of us will make a mistake that we regret.
And we pride ourselves on not wasting time here on this show talking about trivial things.
Right.
Except on Friday.
Isn't there a show called Trivia
yeah,
Friday?
Yeah, we save it all for Fridays, Abe.
Yeah.
Anyway, Abe. Is new to radio, but sounds like a veteran. That's
does
my point.
Sound like a veteran.
And he's already done 3 hours by himself this morning, so this will be a breeze. Well, a lot to discuss and talk about. Jan Markell, one of our favorite guests, will be with us in 7 or 8 minutes here on the program. From the we'll talk about what happened yesterday in France with the priest being beheaded in the church, and what this means for our. Well, just the national security issue is it's going to be played out, especially in the election in the next few months. Ed, you told me you're not watching any more of the Democrat National Committee. You're going to watch Hillary Clinton on Thursday? That's the plan?
That's the plan. I watched.
Why would you
everything.
Do that?
Well,
since you're not going to vote for her.
Well, I want to hear what she has to say. She's running for president. I want to hear her speech, and she's going to lay out her vision. And you know, Tim, I'm still torn. I'm not sure. So I watched everything Monday night. I mean, I just forced myself, and I just say, you know, I'm in disagreement with 99.9% of, you know, of
right,
the Democratic
right.
platform. So, but because I knew we would talk about it on Tuesday, I watched it. And I could not watch it last night because of a spiritual commitment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I had to. Well, my wife and I had marriage
counseling. Because you didn't want to watch, right?
Well, I didn't. It was a perfect excuse.
Right. Right.
No, we were counseling with someone. We have church tonight.
Right.
Those are my two excuses.
God bless you.
You know,
you're a holy man.
Yes.
You can't, babe.
Holy as in
babe.
Sanctified to God, how much, or has holes in his
story?
Yes.
How much?
That's
did
what
you,
I want to know.
How much did you watch?
I watched a lot.
Okay.
I've
always been, well, the three of us, I think, probably would qualify as political junkies in that we keep up with this stuff. Democrat, Republican, whatever, in the news. So you wanted to hear and see what was going on last night?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And what struck you?
Well, they had a transgender speaker last night.
They did?
Yesterday, not in the primetime slot, but yeah.
You know, at the Democrat National Convention at this in Philadelphia, at this arena where they're having their convention, they've got a bathroom situation.
Mm-hmm. A transgender bathroom.
Yeah, they got a bathroom set aside, you know, with like 10 stalls in there from what I saw from the picture for transgendered people. What used to be called transvestites, am I right?
Yes.
Well, that's years ago. That was kind of a catch-all term.
Okay, well, transvestite, transgender. They're not transgender. They either have male genitalia or they have female genitalia. So they're not trans. You don't trans. You're not right. Okay, yeah. I digress.
Yes.
I digress. But anyway, they got these restrooms set aside for, quote, transgendered people. There's nobody using them, number one.
Right. They said as of yesterday, they said nobody had used it.
Right. So you got three janitors completely out of a job. But they're union, so they're going to get
got that right.
They're going to get paid. So anyway, the point is, even at the Democrat National Convention, they don't allow men to go into women's restrooms.
Right.
Which is the whole point of the LGBT condemnation of North Carolina.
Right.
And they're not even doing it at the Democrat National Convention.
Well, in fact, you know, the NBA, which has followed through on its threat to pull the All-Star game from Charlotte mm-hmm. for this coming year, they don't even allow at basketball games. If you're going to a Philadelphia Sixers game,
right.
you know, or you go watch the Miami Heat or the Boston Celtics, and you're a guy, you don't go into the women's restroom. So they're punishing North Carolina for basically putting in law what the NBA does at all its games, and that is keep gender-specific bathrooms and the people separate.
This does beg the question, how in the world, Abe, does the National Basketball Association, if you survey their players, I'll guarantee you that 100 out of 100 of their players, if you said, do you want some dude going in the bathroom with your 8-year-old daughter, are you good with that? They would say, probably in more colorful language than I'm using right now, blank no, I don't want, and that won't happen. Some dude's not going in a restroom with my daughter or daughters. That just ain't happening. But so if that's, and I think I properly expressed the attitude of probably 99 out of 100 fathers,
right.
at least. Okay, if that being the case, how is it, Abe, that the NBA succumbs to somebody's pressure to move their All-Star game in the name of defending a man's right to go into a women's restroom? That just seems so bizarre to me.
I don't necessarily think they were pressured to do it. I think the NBA is...
But what leverage do you use? Sound like Sean Hannity. Won't even let you answer my question. Anyway. I don't understand... Take me a level deeper here. What leverage is it that, and what groups are putting pressure on the NBA, this enormously popular and wealthy organization, to move them, to make them move their All-Star game from a city like Charlotte to somewhere else? That's a lot of, somebody's bringing a lot of pressure to
that. Yeah, and think about it. And Governor Pence in Indiana, the NCAA threatened to take the Final Four. The Final Four was set to be played in Indiana at the time.
Right.
Mike Pence was governor when they were trying to pass RFRA. The same thing here, that there's something going on inside the NBA similar to the NCAA, and it seems to be the issue du jour, the LGBT issue du jour, that is attempting to, in addition to corporate institutions, to get entertainment leagues to weigh in.
What would happen though at the NBA if their chairman, I forget the fellow's name,
Stern.
Adam Silver.
It used to be Stern, but
David Stern is gone.
So somebody like the Human Rights Campaign, which is a pro LGBT group, calls up the NBA commissioner and says, "Hey, you need to move your All-Star game out of Charlotte because there are a bunch of bigots down there who won't let men go." This isn't how they phrase it. This is how I phrase it. But they would say it's a bunch of bigots down there who are, you know, keeping transgendered from using the restrooms of their choice, and that's just unacceptable. My question would be, why wouldn't an NBA commissioner go, "Who are you again?" Or would they, why wouldn't they say to that person who's threatening them, "Well, thank you for calling and voicing your opinion. Appreciate it. Hang up the phone and move on with business."
All right, Tim. I'm going to lay it on the line for you.
Please do. That's what I'm asking for.
This is what it is. People don't like it. I hate it, to be honest with you. But the LGBTQ community has been successful in conflating their issues with the civil rights struggle of the 60s. None of these corporations that are bowing to this stuff, none of these entertainment entities, which the NBA is, it's entertainment.
Right.
And, you know, none of these entities want to find themselves on the wrong side of history.
And
that's
what
it is.
You're using air quotes.
I'm using air quotes. Yeah, I guess I should tell the listeners. They don't want to find themselves on the wrong side of history. They don't want to be, you know, the NBA equivalent, the entertainment equivalent, or the business equivalent of a Bull Connor.
Right.
That is how the issue is framed publicly. So I agree with you, and I see your eyebrows furrowing. It doesn't make any sense. But that is how this issue has been framed popular consumption.
You're talking about the tail wagging the dog. You've got a LGBT community that at best represents 2-3% of the American public, at best, okay? And they have the power to tell the NBA, you move to order the NBA around?
Well, let's make this charade even more clear. And I agree with Abe, they have successfully melded the two ideas in the public mind, the civil rights struggle and the
and a man using a women's restroom.
Right. Yep. And here's the thing. Excuse me. You have the black community in America lynched. We're not even going back as far as slavery. Lynched, denied basic human rights, separate but equal, all of those kinds of things. All right. And having almost no economic power or political influence in many places in the country, we couldn't even vote.
You're giving us the real history of...
Compared to the homosexual community, which is at the top of the economic food chain. Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so you have, you know, you have cartoons, and we sent out an action alert about Hilton hotels putting an ad in two men in bed together. We are talking about
they got gay marriage. They got it all. Gays in the military.
They control Hollywood in terms of what we say goes in terms of the presentation of them. They control academia. Mm-hmm. They control the media. Everybody loves.
And now they control professional sports.
And so, how you compare that to the struggle for blacks in this country for equal rights is part of the blindness that has overtaken us. I've never heard of anyone pulled over for driving while gay. Okay.
Right,
I have
right.
heard of people pulled over for driving while black. So how you compare the struggle of homosexuals in this country to what
well, you know
blacks
what?
Have,
we talk about
this unbelievable.
More. Yeah.
But they've succeeded.
They've succeeded. It's but I also you would need the black civil rights leaders to stand up and say, you're not like us. Don't make your LGBT claims equal to the civil rights movement. Now, Colin Powell did this one time. He said, listen, this is back in the 90s, I think, when they were talking about.
Well, this is after the first Iraq war.
Yeah, and they were talking about putting open homosexuals in the military, and he testified, he said, this is a terrible idea. He said, and that furthermore, skin color is benign.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Homosexuality is a sexual act.
Right.
Okay. You're talking about a sexual action of choice versus someone's born skin color. They're not the equal.
Right.
Okay. But anyway, Colin Powell ultimately that argument, which makes perfect sense, lost out to irrationality.
Yep. Right.
And the LGBT. I'm convinced that. Hollywood, and by that I mean the entertainment industry, combine that with the news media, they wield more power than anybody else.
It's called the will and grace effect. There's been several studies that demonstrated that people who watched Will and Grace actually changed their minds about same-sex marriage over a period of time.
Absolutely.
So it you know, media does play a huge role in the formation of public attitudes.
But just the fact that they can make they order the NBA around, and the NBA tries to boss North Carolina, and North Carolina said not going to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
good for North Carolina.
It's going to take more people to do that, to draw the line in the sand and say, listen, we're not going to tolerate this kind of active threats. Yeah. It's extortion, really.
Everybody, vacation, if you're going to go on vacation this or visit somewhere, go to North Carolina or Mississippi. Make it a point to go to those two states and spend some money because those are the two states in particular this summer that are being singled out for punishment by the LGBT activists and their friends and their supporters. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Joining us now from the Twin Cities in Minnesota is our good friend Jan Markell with Olive Tree Ministries and host of the program Understanding the Times on the weekends here on American Family Radio. Jan, good morning.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. I enjoyed the discussion you've been having.
Well, it's just the control that the LGBT forces have when they represent, as I said, 2% of the population. And even of that 2%, probably only 1% of what you would call vocal activists. I would say half the LGBT community, they just want to live their lives and be left alone. They don't want to force anybody to accept their. Right. But you got these activists out there who just. Anyway, I wanted to talk to you about what happened in France yesterday, Jan. We had this situation where this priest was conducting mass in Normandy, France. And the Islamic jihadists there, one of them local, two guys, right, went in and, cut the guy's head off. Beheaded the priest during mass. Go ahead. Did I get that story right?
Yeah, unfortunately you do. Europe is paying terrible price for, the continent really threw God out such a long, long time ago. And, of course, then they went the socialist route and they went the almost the one world route with the EU and no borders and no guns allowed and everything, politics far, far left. And sadly, this is what you get with liberalism run amok. And we can take those same principles here to America, and I'm very concerned because you've got the far left running amok right now here too, and they stand for the same things, all government and no borders and unlimited immigration, and anybody can walk across and carry across our borders any kind of weapon. Why aren't American leaders learning a lesson from what happened to Europe, which is now imploding? But they don't seem to be watching the Democrat National Convention. They haven't learned a thing.
Now, what do you think President Obama, did he, by the way, I looked online this morning and I didn't search long. Did President Obama or his press secretary have anything to say about the priest having his head cut off at mass yesterday in France? He didn't say anything?
Still.
No, because what happens to Christians, that doesn't
You
matter.
Said of course. You said of course not, Jan. Why would you be so emphatic with that? As if you didn't expect for him to say anything on that for a reason.
He never has. He's never stood up for what happens to Christians or even the Yazidis. So they're not Christians, but they are a minority that's terribly persecuted. No, the only ones he's
Why doesn't he? Why doesn't he?
Because his heart is with the Muslims. He says that in one of his two books. He says, when the ill winds blow, I will always stand with the Muslims. I don't know if it's book one or book two, but that's a paraphrase of what he writes.
That's what he said? Book. That's what he wrote? Obama? Yeah. Is that Dreams of My Father?
I believe so, and I think if you Google that, you'll...
Okay, are you paraphrasing or quoting?
I'm paraphrasing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're saying the reason that President Obama will never stand up for the Christians is because despite the fact that he says he is one, is because he more identifies with the Muslims than he does with the Christians. But it'd be hard to get away with that and be elected president of the United States. That's why. But you said he says it in a book, in one of his books.
Yes, he says it in a book, but actions speak pretty loudly.
I know. No, I know.
It's always there if Islam gets hammered, but not if Christians do.
You know, we got Muslims committing atrocities now all over the world on television for people to see. Of course, this has been going on since the inception of Islam.
That's right.
So it's nothing new for those who really want to study world history. But the situation you got now, the whole world is seeing this on a daily basis. It's like, you know, you got news. Then you got the weather and then sports. And, oh, by the way, the Muslims cut off somebody's head today.
Right.
In other news. I mean, it's becoming just commonplace. And President Obama says nothing about the Christians.
Yeah, I'd like to get Jan's take on this question. Do you think there's any hope for Europe to in extracting itself from this kind of very precarious situation with millions of Muslims
that they've let in?
Is there any hope of extracting themselves from this?
Well, here, you know, what happened several weeks ago with Brexit is hugely significant, where the Britons voted to leave the EU, and of course, it was only a segment. I think it was about half of Britons voted to leave the EU, because those half are like the conservatives here in America. We're just fed up with, again, I'm repeating myself, with the open borders, and you can't carry guns, at least you can't over there. I think that's coming here as well. So in Great Britain, a good portion of them voted to secede from the European Union. Now, the speculation is, and I think it's very solid speculation, and I'm going to be doing some radio recording on this here in the coming days, speculation is that this has inspired other nations that are a part of the EU to try to secede from the European Union as well, because, again, everything the EU stands for is evil. And they have destroyed the European continent. It's what globalism does, and the EU represents all things globalism in one world, the global elite. And I know that sounds conspiratorial, but there is a global elite. And I just had Michelle Bachmann on my program for 2 weeks trying to explain that. So I am watching really with great interest as to where is this Brexit going next? What country is next to secede from the EU? And if other nations do secede from the EU, then what does this do to Bible prophecy? Because it would seem that the EU is going to be the central primary player in the end times. Obviously, the Bible doesn't reference the EU, but it references a conglomeration of European nations that seem to come together in the last days. And out of that conglomeration forms global government. Well, right now, that's all in turmoil over there. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out. I'm watching the headlines daily. And then point B of that is, where does America fit into that scenario? And I'm not sure we have that answer quite yet.
Jan, your program airs on American Family Radio on the weekends, other radio stations, too, across the country. It airs at 12:05 Central Time on Sundays. What about
Saturdays?
Saturdays, I believe it's 1 to 2 p.m. Central.
Your ministry is called Olive Tree Ministries, and people can read. What's the website?
OliveTreeViews.org, OliveTreeViews.org. And we love the AFR audience. They are great, great people because they're tuned in, and that's in part thanks to you folks.
Jan Markell, M-A-R-K-E-L, our guest today, from the Twin Cities. And you got your conference coming up?
Yeah, October the 15th, and we'll have some folks from AFR land. We always do. It's Ann Graham Lotz, Mark Hitchcock, Amir Sarfati, and Bill Koenig. We'll talk about the issues of the day and try to make sense of them, as challenging as that is.
Olive Tree Ministries, so you can find out more about Jan's conference. It's free. Check that out. Jan, thanks so much for your
time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
We're going to be back after the news with more of today's issues on the, not the news.
Just a short break.
Yeah, just a short break coming up, and then we'll be back with more of today's issues here on the American Family Radio Network.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll continue to inform listeners.
I don't know anybody who's ever been pulled over for driving while gay.
Encourage Christians to make a difference.
Our encouragement to folks is to find some help to, in a Christian way, deal with the temptation.
Amen. And equip you to help restore the moral foundations of our nation.
It's the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekdays at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR,
or online at AFR.net.
It was a time when men rebuilt the ruins and held spears, shields, and bows. With one hand, they laid bricks. With the other, they held a weapon. Jerusalem had been destroyed by enemies that moved in after Judah was taken into captivity. Nehemiah said, "You see the distress we're in? Let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach." The people said, "Let us rise up and build," and set their hands to the good work. Our nation, after many years of decline, is in a state of moral destruction. The cry is going out, "Do you see the distress we're in? Rise up and build." To restore the moral foundations of America, an army of citizens must set their hands to a good work and be ready to fight.
The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. AFA.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. The Star-Spangled Banner was desecrated in Philadelphia yesterday. Protesters at the Democratic National Convention burned Old Glory. They threw our flag on the ground and stomped on it. Video I doubt you will see in the mainstream media. I can't even begin to imagine the anti-American hatred they harbor in their hearts, their contempt for those who fought and died for the Stars and Stripes. And yet the protesters proudly flew communist flags. Another story missing from the headlines, Black Lives Matters segregated a protest march. What you are about to hear is the voice of one of the march leaders.
I need all white people to move to the back. This is a black and brown resistance march.
It's outright racism on full display in the city of brotherly love. White people to the back, black people to the front. I wonder what Rosa Parks would have done. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We have a Facebook page for Today's Issues and for American Family Radio. Please go and check that out. And a website. We have podcasts. We're modern. We're high tech. We got it all. Just go there and you just download.
To
your heart's content. Ed Battagliano co-hosting with me, Tim Wildman, and Abe Hamilton. Hey, I wanted to mention, I had mentioned this in 2 weeks or so. We've got our 2017 tour of the Holy Land planned. And we've already had a few people sign up to go. It's March 9th through the 17th. We'll be leaving from New York City to direct flight to Tel Aviv, and then we'll see the land of the Bible, and it's going to be a wonderful time. Mid-March is typically great weather, low 70s in the day, high 50s at night, and we'll see all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child, the itinerary we've got set. And so it's going to be wonderful. I've had the privilege and been blessed to have gone to the Holy Land for 2 decades now. So over 20 times at leading groups. So if you ask yourself, I want somebody that's experienced, then I think I qualify.
You qualify. That's right.
I think I qualify with 20 plus tours of the Holy Land with groups. And I love going. And seeing people's eyes light up, and their hearts start pounding when we go to these places where you go, wow, I'm actually where Jesus was.
Yeah,
I'm in the old city of Jerusalem. I'm in Bethlehem. I'm in Nazareth. I'm in Jericho. I'm riding a boat on the Sea of Galilee. I'm getting baptized in the Jordan River. Yes, 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 yes. It's that wonderful. And so. If you would like to go with us, or you want to look at going with us, and you want there's two ways to find out all the information on this trip. One is you can go online at twholyland.com, twholyland.com, or you can call us and we will mail you a brochure. that you can, you know, for those of you who like to have something in your hands to read and look at, that's who I'm talking to. We'll mail you a brochure. Did I say brochure and brochure?
I think you did say brochure.
I think brochure is French. But anyway.
A brochure.
That's what I'm saying, a brochure. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is.
If you want that brochure, please call this phone number. I don't know why I've slipped into.
That Pepe Le Pew now.
Jacques Rousseau. Jacques Rousseau or Professor Clouseau.
Hello, baby. Thank right. goodness.
There you go. You guys. You got,
poor little girl.
There you go. Okay. You guys trying to get me off. I try to keep this show
serious,
on a straight path, and you guys try to divert me. I'm not going to let it happen this time. So here, or you can go to our Facebook page for all the information on the tour. But anyway, back to my point. And the point is, if you want to call and order a brochure, you need to dial this phone number. 800 families, 800 FAMILIES. Yes, I know there are numbers, but I give you letters because it's easier to remember.
Right.
1-800 families, that's with an S, and then go to option 5. Just touch the 5 on your phone and leave us your name and your address, and we will send you a brochure in the mail today. We have Cindy, my secretary, standing by right now to take your call.
Operator standing by.
No, it's an operator.
Yeah, operator.
One. Cindy, she'll take
well,
it.
Now
she'll,
for your brochure.
What you do, you're leaving. Okay. Okay, Ed. All right. All right. Do you, Abe and I will just be quiet. You go ahead. Get it out of your system. Use all the French you want to use.
My wife will tell you, okay, there is no emptying out this system.
Okay. Okay. All right. So anyway, 1-800 families, option 5. Leave us your name and your address. We will retrieve that information and mail you a brochure on the Holy Land Tour for 2017, March 9th through the 17th. And you ask Tim, is it safe? And if you have to ask that question, I better not say that because I'm trying to recruit people to go.
Right, that's right.
I'm not trying to, you know, make fun of people. I'm just saying, folks, tell me where it's safe in the world. Okay. Maybe in the middle of the Amazon. I don't think so. You got big snakes out there.
That's right.
I don't think
so. I'd much rather be in Israel.
So don't give me middle of
the
Amazon.
Yeah.
Maybe on the plains of, I don't know.
Hey,
Alberta.
By yourself
no, they
in
got
Montana. They got
yeah.
grizzly bears. You
yeah.
know, I mean.
Somewhere camping in Southern California? No, there's fires. I mean, you can't go anywhere in the world where you're perfectly safe. But I would say this. I feel as safe in Israel as I do anywhere because they take security so seriously. They don't play. They don't pay. They don't do political correctness. They don't. And they profile. They do all the things that make common sense to protect people. And so Israel is a safest place as a country.
Now, I've been to the Holy Land twice, once to Jordan,
right.
once to Israel, and at no time did I ever feel in the least bit of danger.
No.
Actually, until I came back to New York City. That's true. I had to stay at a hotel the night before to catch a really right. early flight back home, and the hotel that I had looked up online was a little sketchier than they had
okay.
given.
So you're sitting in your hotel in
New York.
Jerusalem and talking to somebody, and they say, "You're going to New York?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Safe there?
Is it safe there?" Oh,
I haven't
man.
Been to Israel yet.
Yeah.
I'll get
yeah,
there
need
soon
to do
enough.
That. So it's a wonderful place to go and land of the Bible, and we'll be doing that in March. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed, our next guest.
Yes, want to welcome Stephen Williams, who, along with his wife, Sarah, co-authored the book Navigating Public Schools, Charting a Course to Protect Your Child's Christian Faith and Worldview. Stephen, welcome to Today's Issues.
Yeah, hi, Tim, Ed, and Abe. It's great to be with you this morning.
Well, this is a very timely book. I think people are going to get a lot out of it, and it's timely because Christians, more than ever before, I think, are really struggling with what is the best way to educate our children? Should we homeschool? Should we send them to a Christian school, private school, public schools? You deal specifically with what is happening in the public schools. Give us your short answer in terms of if a parent came to you and said, I'm going to give you 60 seconds, tell me if we should send our kids to public schools, and if we do, what should we be alert for?
Well, two things. First and foremost, they need to be on their knees in prayer and seek the Lord as to where their kids should be educated. We get into that right in the introduction of the book and say we're not advocating that all Christians get their kids into public schools, but we're also not advocating that you just carte blanche, pull them out. What we're saying is Christians need to be aware of where an anti-Christian worldview can creep up. And you see it in the news media, you know, happening more and more, where at times a Christian worldview is under attack. So Christians need to be aware of where that can happen. They need to be, basically wise as serpents, but innocent as doves, and then seek the Lord as to whether to have their kids in public schools or not. And then if they're in public schools, they need to be proactive and get equipped on knowing their rights in public schools, know how to, you know, protect their child's Christian faith. And that's why we wrote the book.
Hi, Stephen. This is Abe here. Part of the presentation in your book comes from the background of having experience as public school teachers yourself. Either one or both of you were public school teachers. Is that right?
That's right. I was a public school teacher for 10 years in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay. Being in the San Francisco Bay Area public schools, how did that experience contribute to your decision to write that book, and what type of insight would you want to share with our listeners based on that experience?
Yeah, you bet. I was teaching, and I love teaching early U.S. history using primary source documents. So, for example, we're learning about Pennsylvania, you know, the founder, William Penn. Well, he wrote a document called The Frame of Government. In this document, he quotes Romans 13 when he talks about the purpose of government. As you guys know, many of the roots of this nation, the foundation of this nation, was on a Christian worldview. And so my principal and school district wrongly started to censor primary source documents of our nation's history, whether it was William Penn or George Washington, Sam Adams. Even parts of the Declaration of Independence were censored. And so I said, hang on a second. I called Alliance Defending Freedom, and I said, can they censor these documents? They said no. So a court case ensued, and you might have seen some of the headlines like Declaration of Independence banned in Cupertino, California. So that was my classroom, and that was kind of the genesis that led me into ministry and eventually to write this book.
We're talking with Stephen Williams. His wife, Sarah, is the co-author of this book, Navigating Public Schools. Stephen, you say in the book that we have that what happens in the public sphere and oftentimes in public schools, the hostility towards Christianity is illegal and unconstitutional. We're told it's just the opposite, that being, you know, hostile to Christianity, or at least just simply ignoring it, is the only approach that is legal and constitutional. So which is right?
Well, this misunderstanding of this, you know, phrase, the separation of church and state, that everybody has heard, well, ad nauseum out there, and it's really used to kowtow Christians, you know, just to kind of stay in the corner, you know, don't speak out. But it has created a double standard. So, for example, during my court case down in Cupertino, California, there was another teacher in our same school district, Cupertino Union School District, doing an Islam Living History Day, where the kids were bringing their prayer carpets, praying five times a day, memorizing the five pillars of Islam. You know, doing these types of activities, you get applauded for cultural diversity, but just bringing up, you know, primary source documents of our nation's history when they have Christian references, you say, ooh, no, that's violating the separation. So there's really a double standard, and it doesn't happen all the time. We make this point in the book that not all schools are coming from this double standard or anti-Christian hostility, but at times it comes up. So if you're in the public school system, you need to be aware of where these things can happen.
So as you have spent 10 years in the public schools and now are involved in ministry and you're writing about this subject, do you think, and of course we'll talk about some of these other issues, but do you think there is a point coming where things might change? You know, in other words, a lot of Christian parents, I think, are just, you know, they have lost all hope that the public school system can be rehabilitated.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, you know, there's a common kind of stance out in the body of Christ, and I think it does a little bit of a disservice where they say the public school systems, all schools are of the devil. They're teaching an anti-Christian worldview, and you need to pull your kids out immediately. The problem with that is that not all schools have an anti-Christian, you know, hostility in them. So, for example, I know teachers, I know classrooms, schools, I know entire school districts where they are presenting a curriculum that is very balanced and not hostile towards a Christian worldview. So you really can't make the case that all schools are going to be hostile towards a Christian worldview because they're just not. So, but hey, are we coming to, could there be in the future a time? Yeah, absolutely, there could be a future down the road. But we're saying that hasn't happened yet. And so we wrote the book not just for parents and students, but it's really for teachers, administrators, any paid staff, volunteers, you know, Good News Club teachers, Young Life pastors. They all can be involved in the public school campus. And when they get equipped to know their rights, they can really use the public school system as a platform for ministry, well within their constitutional rights as well. So we want to encourage the body of Christ that, you know, that we can go and be a light for Jesus Christ in the public school system.
Talking to Stephen Williams, he and his wife Sarah wrote the book Navigating Public Schools, Charting a Course to Protect Your Child's Christian Faith and Worldview. Let me ask you, Abe, I know you homeschool your kids.
Yes.
My three went to public school.
Mm-hmm.
They're adults now.
My two as well went to public school.
Public schools. And I know a lot of our listeners send their kids to Christian schools. People always ask, I don't get asked very often, what do you think about that? And I say, well, what do you think about it? People need to make up their own mind on what's their best situation. Because I do think you're right, Stephen. A lot of people maybe asking about making blanket statements about public schools is like making blanket statements about church denominations. To me, it's like because there are church, because churches are different. You know, they're all churches, but churches are different based on who the administration is, based on who the teachers are. But I do think sometimes, and please understand me, folks, if you feel led to go to homeschool your children, God bless you, and I think that's wonderful. Same thing with Christian schools. Some people go to private schools. Some people have good public schools in their area. But sometimes I hear Christians make blanket statements about public schools, and I think, well, be specific with your criticism if you're going to criticize, okay, because the schools most of the time are not engaged in, they don't have a class where they say, you know, we're going to promote humanism this hour. Now, most of the time it's basic reading, writing, arithmetic, lunch, PE, sports, whatever that case may be. Now, you get into classes like, this is my opinion, you get into classes like science, for example, maybe. You have to maybe you have to watch history because the textbooks that a lot of these schools use have been changed by the historical liberal revisionists. The revisionists who come from a liberal secular. So those things, yeah, those are legitimate things you have to look at when you're considering having your child in public education and what I should be wary of.
Mm-hmm.
But the average teacher is not out there to destroy the soul of your child, Abe. But sometimes I hear Christians.
Yeah.
Use that, and anyway, and the Christian teachers inside the schools, they feel like, man, I'm trying to be a salt and light in here, and you're telling me I'm in the devil system. Anyway, go ahead, Abe.
No, I mean, I had a question, but There are some places.
But Tim talked for 3 minutes.
No, that's okay.
Without even taking a breath.
That's all right.
And I had a question, but I forgot what it was. But go ahead.
But you have, and I get your analogy with the churches, but the difference between the churches is that you have a government application of the concept, the inaccurate understanding of separation of church and state, where you have lots of schools that are afraid to allow anything that would remotely be considered something Christian. I mean, let's just be honest. The separation of church and state only comes up when it's talking about Christianity. Because everything else is allowed, pretty much.
Under well, that's God. part of Steve's point.
Right.
About Islam.
Right. Right. Islam is allowed. But the question I had, Steve, is that we are seeing a phenomenon where a lot, I don't want to overgeneralize it, but huge numbers of young people, children, teenagers, are abdicating the Christian faith. Why do you think that is the case?
Yeah, it's a really sad thing when the body of Christ disengages from culture. And, you know, Tim, I agree. I think when you look at the public school system, not every one of them is coming from an anti-Christian worldview. But, you know, to Abe's point, we also talk about this in the book. Hey, there have been secular humanist influences on our, you know, government socialized education system that have caused,
right,
at times, an anti-Christian worldview to creep in. You know, John Dewey, you know, who was
no, absolutely,
atheist.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So there are, and so we bring those up. Why do we bring them up? Not to like scare Christians and say, well, you need to have to get your kids out, but to say, hey, you need to be aware. You need to be wise as serpents,
right,
innocent as doves, where this you know, anti-Christian worldview can creep up. And that's why, again, in this book, that it's an empowering tool, hopefully, for Christians to be aware and to then pray about where to educate their kids.
We're talking with Stephen Williams, who, along with his wife Sarah, have written the book, Navigating Public Schools, Charting a Course to Protect Your Child's Christian Faith and Worldviews. Stephen spent 10 years in the public school system. Some of the things that kind of trickle down, if you will, to the kids in the classroom are just, you don't know it unless you pay attention. In your book, you have plenty of great examples in your book, Stephen. One of the things that I thought was striking was, here's an example of an omission now from a fifth grade textbook on the Declaration of Independence. And what they do is they paraphrase, mm-hmm, the Declaration of Independence. And so here's what the Declaration actually says. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world. All right, now, so what does the textbook do with that? It paraphrases that statement to read as follows. In the name of the American people, we members of the Continental Congress. Okay, so they completely strip away what the Declaration says about appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world. So nobody, you know, if I'm a parent and I don't know that this kind of, as you mentioned, Tim, historical revisionism has taken place, I look at that and I go, huh, that must be what the Declaration of Independence says.
Right.
But what they have done was they have purposed to strip away any reference to God because of their agenda. Nobody, very few people are going to know that this happened when the kid opens the textbook.
That's exactly right. We wrote a chapter. Chapter 7 of the book is, you know, chart your course, prepare for curriculum issues, history, and social studies. And you see, at times, this historical revisionism where, and we document it. You know, we're not just saying there's historical revisionism. I say, look, here's a real-life example. Now, that's in California, and the same, we're in Bend, Oregon, same textbook used in Oregon, but hey, praise the Lord that Christians got involved in Texas, and you know, were so involved in at the board level that they were influencing the standards. And so I praise the Lord that Christians were involved in the public school system, and there's great standards, for example, in the state of Texas. So that's kind of what one of our points is. When Christians get involved and start influencing things, we can correct some of the silliness that's going on with historical revisionism or science or, you know, sex education, anti-bullying, Common Core. When Christians get engaged, we can actually impact the public school system in a positive way.
Yeah. Well, listen, what's the name of your book and where can people get it, Stephen?
Yeah, Navigating Public Schools. Our website is preparetheway.us, like United States. So www.preparetheway.us. And they can click on the book, Navigating Public Schools.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
God bless you guys. Thank you for your ministry.
All right. Appreciate you being our guest. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hey, but your kids are young enough that you're home, you guys homeschool. The homeschool movement has just exploded last two decades.
Yeah, it has. And unfortunately, the increase of secular humanism in schools, I mean, yeah, English books, people try to bring in, you know, Invictus poems and other things. And there is a boom in the homeschool movement because some parents have made
the decision. Is that because of Christians or is that because of other people who are not Christians?
A lot of non-Christians.
You have some, but it's dominated by Christians.
Right.
Yeah.
Over the last 10 years, the percentage of non-Christians who have decided to homeschool, and that's for different reasons.
Yeah.
They just look at the number of homeschoolers who are not Christian and not doing it for religious reasons has really skyrocketed because they're looking at public schools and saying, I don't want my kid getting educated there. They're going to come out not even able to read. So, but go ahead. So
no, and that's the truth. It you have people that are not Christian that are doing it for that very reason. They're completely dismayed by the condition of the public school system.
Let me tell you something from a public school. My mom was a public school teacher back, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And my grandmother was back before that. So there's a history in my family of that. But I think in today's society, today's public school teachers get a bum rap in this respect. You got all kind of family breakdown out there going on. And then these kids come to school and they're hooked on Pokemon or they've got no dad in the home or they're from a divorce situation that's not good.
Some of them come hungry.
I mean it's a mess. It's a mess out there. This is not leave it to Beaver anymore. And so these kids go to school with all this stuff going on in their home and in their life that used to not be so prevalent, and then the teachers are supposed to just magically, you know, get them to, you know what I'm saying?
Right. That's unfair to the teachers.
I'm telling you, why isn't this kid performing? Well, maybe it's because he sleeps through class every day because he doesn't get in bed in time because nobody's parenting.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of that in family chaos today that's affecting the academic standards. I'm not exonerating the.
No, it's the truth.
What I'm saying?
It's the truth. And I think that has contributed as well because one of the things that's not discussed often when people talk about kids being educated, school, homeschool, yada, 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 there is an element called peer learning. Because you have those kids who come to school, and what ends up happening is that the peers end up establishing the social norm. You know, most kids don't come out of the womb thinking, you know, learning is boring. In fact, normally learning is something that enlightens us, but you learn that in the social structure. And so you have this breakdown of the family that creates this social environment that contributes to the whole process. And so those things are real considerations.
Yeah.
Very real considerations.
Yeah. Okay, you're listening to the radio program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to take a break here for news here on AFR. And the Three Amigos.
I'm not going to sing.
I was
about to sing the song.
Just go to break quickly. I might start singing.
The theme song.
The
Three Amigos.
Could it be El Guapo if you were angry?
See, and then you harass me when I bring this kind of stuff up.
I'm quoting from the movie Three Amigos, which makes you appreciate the word plethora. We'll be back in 5 minutes after the news with more serious programming here on Today's Issue.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.